Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. It's Tuesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone is back. Those new beats or the original beats? It's like, shut up. Don't bother me with the headphones.
I got them free with a laptop purchase. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Free is good. Ugh. Mine weren't. Okay, we'll talk some football today. That is free for the next 2 hours. Our thoughts in detail about Nebraska football. Another practice. The Big Ten Network folks were here. Rever and Howie and Uncle Jerry. Uncle Jerry will be with us tomorrow on the show. And some of their thoughts, some of our thoughts. And your thoughts, always welcome, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can tap the line. Schilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House lets you do that. They're up in Fallbrook if you're on your way to Lincoln anytime soon or you live here. Good groceries up there and plenty of things to keep you from being thirsty. Thoughts from Bob Diaco, Trent Bray, Dante Williams, and Freedom spoke to the media, so you'll hear from those guys. You'll also get caught up with Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com and Magazine. Mitch with us in 15 minutes. And then Phil Savage. Phil Savage of the Senior Bowl. Phil Savage, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens and Cleveland Browns. Formerly of various stops along the pro circuit when it comes to scouting and front office work. And Phil Savage was in town last week, and his thoughts on Tanner Lee. We'll get caught up with Phil, his thoughts on Tanner, on Mike Riley, on this Nebraska talent level, and just some of the scouting he does. What's he see in Nebraska? That's less than an hour away for you on this Tuesday. So the Big Ten Network guys in town, and Coach DiNardo was with us from the bus a year ago and was very specific about some of his concerns. Was concerned about the line of scrimmage, was concerned about the number of wins, and he was just brutally honest. He didn't know how physical Nebraska would be, could be, and you got fired up at him for it. This year, he isn't going to predict the win-loss total. We may try and trick him into it. No tricking. We may ask him about it tomorrow. But what a difference a year makes by the folks that cover this league at their best and at their worst. They're there all the time. So some of their responses to Nebraska, and they're impressed. There's still some question marks, but the Big Ten Network guys are impressed. They are kind of the guys I listen to most and we try and talk with the most because they see everybody. And you're trying to win the league, and where's Nebraska in that pecking order? And with Nebraska here, they are extremely excited about it. And I think you are too, even though it's week three. There's still two more weeks. The talking points are shifting, but it's not talking points in reaction to a game. That's what's tough. You still got 2.5-3 weeks to wait before Arkansas State rolls in. You got a few more weeks till Oregon, and then that's your kind of early season gauge. What do you think you have? And that's what we're all trying to figure out. And if Coach DiNardo, again with us tomorrow, is going to be impressed, then I think you can be impressed. And if he's going to tell you he's wondering about the physicality, he got smoked for it a year ago, and what happened? He got beat up. He got manhandled by Iowa and Ohio State and Tennessee. When push came to shove, your team wasn't physical enough against some of the better teams. And when we talk about being physical, I don't want you to glaze over or roll your eyes. You can jump in the pool with me on that. It's not just about being able to physically move somebody off the ball two more inches to get a first down. It's about being tough. And are you a tough football team? Are you a tough football team? And I think from what I've seen, their attitude's different. It's tougher. It's no nonsense, no BS. There's an edge. And make no mistake, there's an edge because there's some new eyes watching with new ideas and different ideas how to make a team tougher. Starts with an off-season program. It starts with a guy like Diaco. And it starts with your head coach deciding to shake things up. Nobody's safe, not even best friends, in the name of what's good for the program. And you're seeing a different perspective in that that culture kind of permeate, and it needs to translate on to on-field toughness, but you've seen it through the workouts as you go through this fall camp. So where we start off with Nebraska, are they going to be better? Don't know. The thing that is a smack dab reality is, what did you do offensively last year? What was Nebraska's bread and butter? Tommy, draw play, touchdown. It's quarterback run game. The other bread and butter was kind of the, oh no, don't throw it. Oh yes, he caught it. The backyard, Brett Favre, Wrangler tribute that Tommy would do when he was being chased, like it's a game of tag, except these guys were going to hurt him. The rabbit out of the hat, Tommy Armstrong, third and just go long, worked sometimes. Those are the two things you can count on. You get a big play on offense on third and 38 for six, and you get a quarterback run at the perfectly called time, and it would sting a defense. It translated to 21, not even 21 points in Big Ten play. 20 is what you averaged. About 20 is what you gave up. So with this year three overhaul on defense, with this year three kind of coming back to the norm on offense, can it sync up? Can your offense get you 28 to 35 a game? Doesn't everybody score 30 on offense now in college football? Can your offense get you 38 a game? That's asking a lot, this to an old guy. 40, hang 40? Hell, might as well just ask for half a 100. Can you get between 35 and 40 points on offense? Let's dial it back. And can your defense be as good but better in big games? That's the question mark, and that's what some of the Big Ten guys were talking about. And the focus here offensively, their takeaways, and I think my takeaway, and a lot of Nebraska fans' takeaways too, is I think you have more hope because of what you have at quarterback. And it's not a Tommy bash session. It's not a, well, Tommy didn't do this right. Tommy did a ton for this program and this team. But when you go back to what you're comfortable with, the vastness of the offensive options in this playbook, in this scheme, paired with the quarterback, and we'll talk to Phil Savage, Senior Bowl, about fit, about guys that are pro-style quarterbacks and how they work and how they have worked with Mike Riley. I think that's kind of where you can be optimistic. But you have an overhaul that has taken place, and it starts defensively. That'll still be a work in progress. Offensively is what you got to feel good about moving forward. It can help the defense till they settle. That's what Coach McBride told us yesterday. And it can just be something that's not really easy to stop. And this is what stuck out to me from Coach DiNardo. this is the way, this is an offense that gives you the best chance to win the West. The great, great live album slash DVD, if you're a Zeppelin fan, How the West Was Won. That's Zeppelin. The Mike Riley Pro Style could be a story on how the West was won. And I like it. I like the completion percentage. I like the options. I like the way you can stress a defense. That is all good to me with Nebraska and the offense. You had practice today. You had some thoughts. It was a defensive day, so we'll shift over there for a second. But what are you feeling best about with Nebraska on offense? Is it the quarterback? Is it the fit with quarterback? Is it the feel that you got to be better running the football? The O-line's going to be better. You have some skill guys on offense that can go to work. Tight ends will be all right. You got a lot of options. I mean, the Honda fan poll on HailVarsity.com, what's your biggest concern with the 2017 Huskers through 2 weeks of fall camp? I'm asking the other side here. What are you feeling best about here on offense is we're now into week three. And clearly, it ain't about your receiver's health. Clearly, it's not that a running back has separated himself yet. I think Cav has talked about the O-line, and you've heard Riley say they've taken some steps. But I also think you have to look at just what's been talked about and spewed about your quarterback. And that is going to be your trigger guy. That will be your guy that gives you the difference in your record, in your West contention, in anything beyond is your quarterback and how he fits and how he can work this offense. Colton, you're like Andy Dufresne here, man. You're crossing off days that you're here in a hope to escape, but you're crossing off days till kickoff. You got to be feeling good about some things. You're also pretty realistic. Some might call you flat out, I won't go pessimistic, but you're a realist. That's the way. You're the realist. You're a real 21-year-old about hopes and dreams and what's fact and fiction. And I think the quarterback is where you're hanging your hat as to why the offense can be good and what you can feel best about. Not just your starter, but apparently all three.
Well, I think a big deal with all three of the quarterbacks that this offense can use effectively, I believe it will.
I think if you put them on the field at the same time, you'd be screwing with the defense.
Well, exactly. And it, if Jebby puts on a little bit of weight also, he can become a much bigger threat too. But what we've already seen from him in practice and camp, and he can definitely push that two spot like we've been talking about all week, all these past weeks. Mm-hmm. But I think the big thing with Tanner, we relied so much on Tommy having to throw, which wasn't necessarily his strong suit. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did it. Did he do it well sometimes? Yes.
Yeah, he was great some days, and some days he was great for everyone else.
But he also didn't get a lot of help from his backfield on the downs where we should have been running the ball and, pushing for those short yards, 3-4 yards. When you couldn't get newbie hot, Ozigbo couldn't bust through the line, anything like that. I think the big difference with Tanner is if you need him to throw a deep ball on 3rd and 15, or even if it's 3rd and 3, but you don't want to run the ball, I think he's the guy that can squeeze the ball in there and throw a tight spiral and get it to the guy where it needs to be.
That is a brilliant point. Colton Stone, put your hands together. If you want to throw it, or even if you have to throw it, Tanner's going to theoretically get it there. Right? Because that's a strength of his, the progressions, the understanding, stressing the defense, the offense, and the scheme will have somebody open. So Seathan won't be frustrated that he didn't get the ball. Or the other guy that was wide open running down the seam, you're venturing to guess there's fewer. My mind's already made up. I'm going to you as soon as we say break in the huddle.
Yeah, I I'm thinking it's Lee's going to know where he wants to go. It's just going to be making sure the defense doesn't know where he wants to go.
That's fair. That's completely fair. So we're kind of reacting to some of the kind words by the Big Ten for the offense. You'll hear from Coach Diaco coming up, his thoughts after practice. Mitch Sherman is going to join us shortly. And this offense, this style of offense, is it the best chance for Nebraska to win moving forward? The Big Ten Network guys think so. Because of the talent acclimation or acquisition you can get, but also just having that difference maker at quarterback. Those were some of their thoughts. Again, Coach DiNardo will be with us tomorrow on Hail Varsity Radio. Phil Savage, Senior Bowl, the executive director and longtime NFL and college scout, will be with us in hour two. Mitch Sherman shortly. I want to tell you about Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Birthday or anniversary time, how about pure-grown diamonds as an option from Sauter Heyman? 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, Rod West in Grand Island. They are real diamonds grown in a lab and eco-friendly. 100% sustainable, 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. See Rick and your friends now at Sauter Heyman, sauterheyman.com.
He's in his 30s. But sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Thank you, Kramer. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Got to react to some of the Twitter thoughts from the Big Ten Network folks and having a frank conversation about why you think Nebraska's offense can be better and really what gives you the best chance to win. And it could be the guy pulling the trigger at quarterback. Phil Savage, director of the Senior Bowl, executive director in less than an hour. We welcome in Mr. College Football with ESPN, ESPN.com, and magazine Mitch Sherman, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm well. What's going on, Chris? How are you?
Doing all right. It's another week of camp, which is all good. And some of us want the season to hurry up and get here. Most of us do, I would say that. But there's still some good storylines, and it's fun to catch practice and hear what's being chattered about. And I wanted to ask you this, and Mitch, you've seen a ton of football. What if Mitch Sherman was plucked from the computer and dropped in a college football program, what would you go with offensively? If you had to pick an offense and you were able to recruit to this location you've been whisked away to, what would you do, Mitch? What offense are you most impressed by in college football?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with your location as a school, the kind of resources that you have, mm-hmm. but everything else being equal, you know, I'd want to run one of those great USC offenses maybe that Matt Barkley or Carson Palmer or Matt Leinart ran. Mm-hmm. I think those were beautiful to watch when they were going on all cylinders. I mean, you could say the same thing about Barry Switzer's wishbone, mm-hmm. but I don't think in today's day and age with speed on defense the way that it is, it's more like the NFL college football is than it's ever been, that is going to be the formula long term that I would choose, the formula that's going to win championships over years or contend for championships over years. I think the offense for me, and I guess the best way to boil this down is I would choose to run an offense that looked most like what you see at the next level, because I think today more than ever players that you are tasked to recruit are thinking about themselves. And they have a better worldview than kids ever have, and they understand that in order to play and succeed at football beyond college, they've got to mirror in some way at the college level what the NFL does. So you find me a great NFL offense, and I'd say I want to run one in college that's as close as you can possibly get to that.
It's a good answer, Mitch. And you went SC. And I'm sure there are elements, maybe it's the same offense, but it's a West Coast-based offense that Riley's running, and maybe it's the same thing he ran SC with Keyshawn and, God, who was a quarterback back then? I forget his name. I should know it. Johnson. Johnson was the quarterback. And, yeah, it worked well for them. I think you're right on. I think if you cater to the pro aspirations and find that skill set, it can work out. Now, defensively, is it are you going 3-4? Are you going 4-3? Or just get me a truckload of hybrid guys and we'll figure it out?
Yeah, I think either one can work if you've got great players. And, you know, you're generally playing seven guys up near the line of scrimmage, you know, within 4 or 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. And you put a bunch of athletes in that group, and obviously you need to have them in the back too. And that to me is going to be a general recipe for success. I don't care if you've got four lined up at the line of scrimmage or three. And I think that's universal throughout football. You can find that at all levels, and it translates, not to make this discussion entirely about the NFL, but it translates at that level too. You can play a variety of fronts defensively, where I don't think that there are necessarily all kinds of offenses that can succeed at the NFL level, unless you've got Adrian Peterson in your backfield, then, you know, go for it. You hand it off to him 35 times a game when he's young and not going to get worn out. I mean, if you have Barry Sanders in his prime, by all means, you know, build your offense around him. But a normal roster, there are not a whole lot of ways, I don't think, that you can go offensively at the highest level of football. It's a little different on defense. Defense, to me, is more built around just having great athletes who are near the line of scrimmage, and I don't really care how you in what order or shape or form you line them up in.
Mitch Sherman's with us, ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman. Mitch, saw you tweet out a couple days ago, actually a day ago, the crop of quarterbacks in 2017. And what's your reaction to some of the positivity that's been out there about Tanner Lee?
For me, it's all wait and see. And I know you guys are talking to the Senior Bowl director later, who had nice things to say about him, and that's nothing new. You know, we've heard, well, maybe it's new from the Senior Bowl, but we've heard it throughout the time that Nebraska has, even early in the days when, before we knew he was going to be groomed to be Nebraska's next quarterback, you heard about it from people in his background who said, this guy has the pedigree, this guy looks the part, he throws the ball well, he's going to look different in a Nebraska uniform, standing in the pocket and delivering passes, I think, than anybody we've seen in quite some time. I mean, you can go back to Zach Taylor and the efficiency with which he threw the ball. I don't even think that necessarily is going to be a great comparison. I think Tanner Lee will look more like an NFL quarterback in a Nebraska uniform, just standing there in the pocket and throwing the ball from day one, than anybody just about any of us can remember at Nebraska. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to win 11 games. It doesn't mean that he's going to make everyone happy. It doesn't mean that he's going to become a first-round draft pick. It just means that he looks the part. And to me, so far, all that I've heard about this guy, that's what I take from it. He's going to look the part. There are going to be times in that Arkansas State game on September 2nd when the crowd is wowed because he put a pass on the money 30 yards downfield. But you have to do it consistently. You have to do it in November in the Big Ten. You've got to do it in the big games in loud stadiums on the road. So there's so much that goes into becoming a great quarterback at this level that far transcends and goes beyond all of the stuff that we've heard about him so far, and we'll continue to hear until we see him do it in October, November, you know, in big time settings.
Wisconsin comes here. That's in a monster setting for Nebraska to start off October. Jack Sitchie is out with the ACL, and that domino effect on Wisconsin. They had injuries at linebacker a year ago, and they had a guy like Sitchie step up, and away they go. I mean, they were incredible. They were better than many expected. Can they weather the loss of Sitchie, or does it kind of throw things out of sorts for them and the West?
Yeah, I remember Sitchie at the end of the year before in that Rose Bowl that Wisconsin played in on January 1st of 2016, if that was the date. I assume seems like the Rose Bowl is always on New Year's Day, but you never know.
It's a rule, yes.
Yeah, you have to have the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day, so I'm not wrong in saying January 1st of 2016. But he had a breakout game then and then picked up where he left off all throughout last year. Yeah, I think that's a huge – I think the word I used when I caught wind of that injury when Wisconsin made the announcement was it's devastating, and I don't think that's overstated. That Wisconsin defensively is built around linebackers, has been for quite some time, going back to the Bielema years, and to lose a guy like that in the middle of your defense, you know, he was potentially going to have an impact, like you've seen with some of the great Wisconsin linebackers like Chris Borland and others, and to be without him, you know, can they fill the spot? Yeah, because they're great at grooming those kind of players. They develop linebackers like him and like others in their program. So I'm sure there's somebody behind him who's got the tools to do it with the coaching on that staff, but you had someone in place. So what does it mean for Wisconsin over the course of an entire season? We don't know. It's a comfort level to have that guy and a playmaker that you can rely on in big spots. You know, he's somebody that I expect to come up with a sack on third and long when Wisconsin needs it in a game on the road like Nebraska early in the Big Ten season. So the guy's not there anymore, and the opportunity for Nebraska and others in the Big Ten West to take advantage is there. We'll see if they can make the most of it.
Mitch Sherman's with us, ESPN.com and Magazine. Mitch, want to switch to baseball about 2 minutes here. And I know Alex has been playing, but he had been benched. His role is being reduced, and he was pretty stand-up guy. I read, Mellinger's story on it, and I wanted to get your reaction. You're a big-time Royals fan. You know Gordon extremely well because you covered him and those Nebraska teams that were so great and went to the CWS. What can you share about Alex and how he handles adversity? I mean, watched him grow up, watched him play ball, but you've spent you know him well. What's between his ears here when adversity hits?
Yeah, I guess here's something on the Royals that I can actually speak to with some history and on the reporting side, as opposed to just sitting in front of my TV and being a fan. Alex is somebody who. You know, probably doesn't, and this goes back to college. He didn't experience adversity before college. There were times in his college career, I can think specifically to his freshman year in 2003 at Nebraska, when the Huskers were coming off a couple of College World Series in a row, and they had this hotshot freshman at third base who was expected in some ways to carry the team right away from the beginning because they had so many older players on those 01 and 02 teams that went to Omaha. And here comes Alex, you know, as good of a talent as Mike Anderson and the Dave Van Horn, Childress Anderson era, as good of a talent as they had recruited to the school. And that was borne out with, of course, him being the number two overall pick 2 years later. But he went through some struggles that year. And, you know, nothing on the level like he has experienced at times in his major league career and definitely these last two seasons. But he's always been a guy who's hard on himself. And I guess that's the insight that I can share. And a lot of people know that, who know Alex well. But, you know, it's harder, I think, for him to come out of some of these things because the more he gets himself behind the eight ball offensively at the plate, the more he just kind of digs his heels in and it starts to become – you love that kind of mentality in some ways because it just drives him to be better. Mm-hmm. But it also impacts him in a negative way when something like this is going on. You know, I'm not sold that it's entirely that's happening with Alex. I watch him and watch the way that he hits and I don't have any insight on it, but it looks to me like he's just not 100% healthy and never has been with that wrist since he had surgery. Late in the Royals World Series year of 2015. I know he came back and played well early in the season at times last year and in the offseason and even in the postseason in 2015, came back from that injury and hit that huge home run in game one of the World Series. But to me, right now, he looks like a guy at the plate who isn't comfortable and, you know, isn't able to jump on fastballs the way that he has for his entire life, including most of his big league career. So it's tough to watch, and I read Sam Mellinger's column too, and the thing that stood out to me is the part that he mentioned that everybody is pulling for him, and I think that's true not just across Kansas City but all across Major League Baseball. People know the kind of guy that Alex is. and, you know, what he means to that franchise and that organization in the region around here, and people want him to succeed. You know, they don't want him to beat their team, but they want him to succeed. So it's tough for everybody involved and all the observers to see him go through a lot of the struggles that he has this year.
Mitch Sherman's with us. Mitch, thanks for a few minutes today, bud. Appreciate the insight.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Take care. Have a good rest of the week.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Big thanks to Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and Magazine, and his insight on Alex Gordon there. Got off clock there for a second. Apologies on that. So do we want to hear some Bobby D? Some Bob Diaco thoughts from practice today. So here's one thing I found extremely interesting, and put this in your back pocket, Nebraska fans, with this defense. And a scheme is a scheme is a scheme, and there are blueprints to the 3-4. And remember back when Diaco was hired and the press conference and his influence, the Al Groh, Parcells, Belichick, 3-4. But it seems like there's modifications and adaptations and kind of a Frankenstein thing going on here with this 3-4. And, you know, questions are going to come. How's the install? Are you ahead of schedule? And is the 3-4 looking like you want it to be? And Diaco, yeah, I mean, it's getting there, but let's not just rubber stamp this 3-4. It's my read into this comment, like a lot of 3-4s you see.
Well, to co-sign that, to answer it, I got to co-sign the install of the 3-4. Like, I don't necessarily know what you mean by that or what anybody might mean. We run our own system. Based on the staffs that we've been on, we've built it, and 3-4 is a component and a building block and a piece. And like all strong foundations, there are other pieces. So we're pleased with where we're at as it relates to the install. We are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays. So if we can care for each other really well and be fundamentally sound as a position, as a player, and then ultimately as a defense, a sound defense with our principles, then we believe we can defend.
Okay. We believe we can defend. That's good stuff. But I got to sign off on calling it a 3-4. They're going to look at their personnel. They're going to put the best 11 or sub-packages out there. We'll say instead of 11, we'll say best 14. Nickel, dime, third and eight pass rush, whatever. Go mad scientist, my man. And that's what they're going to do. So, it's not your run-of-the-mill 3-4. You're taking from different pieces. I envision my grandfather's favorite Johnny Cash song, One Piece at a Time. It's the old story about working at the old Cadillac plant, which Johnny Cash did do, but he stole all these parts from all these different years of Cadillacs. And I think the big parts they snuck out there, his buddy's mobile home. So they put this just monstrosity Cadillac together that was the span of 10 years. All different pieces and parts. Right side had four headlights. The left side had two headlights. It was just ugly, probably. But it was a Cadillac, and it was free. The price was right. Be careful of what you call a steak. That's what I'm saying. T-bone, ribeye, New York filet, hamburger steak. Is it in the family? Or is it adopted? That's kind of what he's saying. More from Diaco. Say it with me. What's in the box? What's in the box? Cut number six here. Diaco is going to go to the box. The question is, will he feel shame? That's a slap shot reference.
Really? I mean, I just like to focus, vantage point, distractions, lack of there, hide from the masses, the pitchforks and the burning sticks.
Okay. So he was asked, are you going to be on the field or in the box? He is going to be in the box, upstairs, above us. You good with that? Because you see D coordinators, they're on the field. Even head coaches that didn't have the title, defensive coordinator, they were on the field. Pass staff is what I'm getting at there. Why wouldn't you have him on the field? And I'll say this. Maybe he's more comfortable. He explained it. Set of eyes. Can go through it. I don't know if Darnell's going to be up there or not. The consultation specialist. Don't know if he can or can't. I'm just asking. You know, Bobby Elliott, rest his soul, probably would have been up there because there's not much he hasn't seen. But you need amazing eyes up there. And I think it's some of the past staffs who they had up in the box diagnosing. It's pretty good. So that's kind of his call and Nebraska's call. It's just not, it's not uncommon that a coordinator's up in the box, but usually that's the OC, right? Not the defensive coordinator. Defensive coordinator's on the field. And I don't know the last time he was probably in the box upstairs. Wasn't at UConn. Don't think he was at Notre Dame. Virginia? Maybe? I don't know. We shall see. I really liked this. When it comes to comments Diaco had today and, you know, his perspective, cut seven here. How's the confidence? How's the player confidence? What's he see from those guys? Are they getting more comfortable as they keep moving here forward in camp?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be hopeful that a competitive mindset is being built that's real, you know, not false bravado, not fake nonsense, silliness, but one that's real, because you work and you do the work and you put the work in and you prepare yourself, so you try to create environment that the contest is going to be like, and you perform in that, it should build confidence. And then as that continues, now the game, that's why I say playing in the game is what really becomes a catalyst for this positive spiral upward of habit, preparation, expectations, mindset, confidence, and on and on and on.
So, yeah, he would hope and feel that they're better and getting more comfortable with it. But did he say silliness? You know? Silliness? I mean, we're going to have just a phenomenal greatest hits of Bobby D before the season even starts. Pretty good. More from Coach Diaco next hour. Phil Savage, executive director of the Senior Bowl, longtime NFL scout, longtime guy in college and NFL. His thoughts on Tanner Lee with us on Hail Varsity Radio. His thoughts on Mike Riley. His take on a number of things. Your chance to get qualified for some Ribfest things. That is on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Phil Savage, Senior Bowl executive director, longtime NFL and college scout, with us to start off hour two. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hope you're doing all right. More from Bob Diaco. Dante Williams. We'll get into all of that. We spent the first part of the show talking about kind of the offensive overhaul, meaning that the Nebraska offense and Riley into a comfort level that is pretty unique for the first time in Nebraska since Riley's been here. The defense completely different. You've heard a little bit of Diaco, and my read into his comment on the 3-4 is he's not willing to grant or concede that, yeah, it's a 3-4 like every other 3-4. It's going to be something that's tailored and designed and specialized to the personnel. Personnel will dictate how big time it is. It's not scheme. That's above all. But it's been titled the no split seam, something like that. The no seam defense. I will get the appropriate title eventually. Colton's telling me we got some Ribfest tickets to give away, so we'll do that here shortly. Also, I want to remind you, tomorrow we will catch up with Jerry DiNardo. Coach will spend a few minutes with us, got to nail down a time with him, but bless his heart, he's willing to do that. Big Ten Network in today, and they think scheme-wise, they being DiNardo and company, that this scheme long-term will give Nebraska the best chance to win and win big. Division title beyond, because you're getting some pretty good athletes, some pretty good players, and it is really, really difficult to stop if you're Nebraska. It's really, really difficult to stop Nebraska on offense if things are clicking correctly. And defensively, too, it could be a headache for other teams. I want to remind you about drunk driving. If you plan to go out and grab a drink tonight, be sure to make a plan to get home safe. If not, make a plan anyway, because while your plans can change, there's going to be one thing that won't, and that's if you get caught drinking and driving. You face a DWI, and it could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time. It'd also be required to install an interlock device into your vehicle. So while you're making plans tonight or this weekend, make sure you have a sober ride home before you go out. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. This message from your friends at the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. Let's get you caller 5 right now for Ribfest tickets, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Caller 5, a pair of Ribfest tickets for you. Enjoy that. Give me a report on the brisket. Give me a report on the pulled pork. Give me a report on them ribs. Caller 5 now, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Caller 5, Colton will pick up, take care of you. Ribfest tickets right now. Caller 5, Phil Savage, Executive Director, Senior Bowl, longtime college and NFL scout, next on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in, part of the Alabama Sports Network, director of the Senior Bowl. He's coached and scouted and has done a lot with the game of football. Phil Savage is with us. Phil, nice to speak with you. How's your day?
Everything is good. I'm actually in Troy, Alabama today. I went to the Trojans practice this morning. They have a quarterback named Brandon Silvers, who's a candidate for the recent Senior Bowl. So I'm wearing my orange and Adidas colors today.
Troy used to come up and visit Lincoln from time to time. And, man, you see so much talent. You see so many different spots. You were recently in Lincoln and saw your comments on Tanner Lee on Twitter. And I wanted to kind of start there with Tanner Lee. And comparison-wise, you've scouted. You've been in the NFL. You run the Senior Bowl. Does Lee remind you of anybody?
Well, I'll say this. It's a few years ago at the Manning Academy. I usually drive over there every June to watch the quarterbacks who come in and serve as counselors. And there was a young young quarterback there from Tulane named Tanner Lee. And, you know, I was sort of taken back at two or three summers ago, and I said, wow, you know, Tulane may actually have something here, somebody they can build their program around, because this was a quarterback that had size, that had the arm talent, the ball came off of his hand. And, of course, Tulane struggled. They changed coaches, changed systems. So the next thing you know, from my standpoint, Tanner Lee is headed to Nebraska. And, of course, Mike Riley is one of my dearest friends in all of football. And I can't think of a better place for Tanner Lee to go than to play for Mike in a pro-style system. But Tanner Lee's got the size. He's got the quick release. He's got accuracy with the football. He can throw at different arm angles from what I've seen, and somewhat of a limited exposure. So he's really a player that they can build around. I hope they have enough linemen, enough receivers around him to give him a chance, because I do think that he's definitely a quality prospect. Now, he's got 2 years of eligibility left, and so we'll see what happens in terms of his decision regarding the NFL. But he's definitely a top-flight prospect, at least in my opinion, going into this season.
Phil Savage with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Phil, you know Coach Riley, and Nebraska fans really are excited for what he can do in year three. Riley's specialty, along with Coach Langsdorf, is just being great with quarterbacks. How has Coach Riley, for so many years, been able to make the talent he gets so productive? What's his special gift?
Well, I think he's got just a great feel for the sport, for the game. You know, he's coached on offense, he's coached defense, special teams. He's really done it all. He's done it a lot of different levels in a lot of different cultures, from Canada to the World League to the Pac-12 to the NFL, and now in the Big Ten with Nebraska. So he brings a lot of experience. But I do think that personal connection that Mike has with his players, particularly the quarterback, is one of the reasons why he's had success with players at that position. You go back, look at the NFL now, you've got Derek Anderson at Carolina. He's had a long career in the NFL, primarily as a backup, but he's still flinging it around. Matt Moore, same thing in Miami. And of course, you know, those guys, and then Sean Mannion is at the LA Rams. And so, you know, those are guys that were at Oregon State, which, even though it's a Power 5 program, they're mostly a middle-of-the-pack type of team, you know, compared to the USC's and Oregon's and UCLA's in terms of talent. And so he's shown the capacity to grab quarterbacks, recognize their ability, develop it out, and then send them on to the NFL. I know they're super excited about Tanner this season.
Phil Savage, a few minutes with us here, Hail Varsity Radio. You mentioned cultural experience, and you've kind of been a number of places as well, between UCLA and Alabama, number of years in the NFL, now running the Senior Bowl. And how can be in several different places enhance your ability as a coach? What do you think Mike's taken to be the man he is today?
Yeah, I think one of the mistakes that coaches make, particularly when they're younger, is that, you know, they're at a certain school, they win, they form a template of how to win at that particular school and program, then they get hired to the next job and they try to duplicate the same thing. And oftentimes it won't work at the next stop. So you have to learn to adapt and adjust depending on geography, depending on, you know, academic rigors at particular universities, and all those sorts of things. And, you know, Mike's been around long enough to understand that it's going to be a different experience at Nebraska than it was at Oregon State, or it was when he was at USC as an assistant back in the 90s. So, you know, I think that with Nebraska, there's still, at least in my view, this is a total outsider's perspective, I think in some ways they're still trying to figure out, are we the Nebraska of 20 years ago where you could recruit from coast to coast, or are we a team that needs to regionalize our recruiting and really build ourselves to compete in the Big Ten West? Because that's the first goal, is to win that division get to the championship game, and if you go win the championship of the Big Ten, most likely you're going to be in the playoffs. So I think there's probably some of that going on as all these schools go through trying to figure out how to modernize their program and stay ahead of the curve. I think some of that might be going on at Nebraska right now, just as an outside observation, watching from far away.
Phil Savage is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Let's talk Tanner Lee for a second, and you mentioned some of his skill sets and attributes, but from a demeanor standpoint, was that something, and I know you just had a day there, but his demeanor, is that something that is attractive to potential NFL guys, just what's above his shoulder pads?
Sure. When I tweeted about him, of course, I mentioned the personality, and, you know, the staff there at Nebraska, I think they were very encouraged by the fact that, you know, he's a regular guy. He fits in with his teammates, and, you know, obviously he's new to the program there, but it doesn't take long to watch him spin the football three or four times, and I promise you, if you're a player there, you're going to say, hey, I want to follow that guy because he can really throw the rock. So I think they're very encouraged by what he's going to bring to the table intangibly, and then, of course, just in terms of his size and arm strength and accuracy, really above and beyond that. I just think that it's just it's an ideal fit. And, you know, I'm told that Archie Manning, who runs the Manning Academy, when Tanner was trying to decide where he was going to go next as a transfer, that Archie reached out to Chris Mortensen of ESPN. They're longtime friends. And of course, Chris has a son that coaches at Alabama. But, you know, he said, hey, you know the lay of the land in college football. Where are some suggestions you would make for a pocket-style passer that really has some potential? And Mort said, you know, I would look into Mike Riley in Nebraska. So that was at least sort of the genesis of where this came from. But I think Husker fans should be, you know, really excited about what they're going to see from Tanner. It's certainly for this year, maybe even over the next 2 years.
Phil, when you look at Nebraska's makeup, I know you were looking at Tanner Lee, but from your eyesight, talent-wise, were you impressed with some of the other spots, other positions on the field with Nebraska?
Yeah, you know, I think with Nebraska, of course, you know, again, I was primarily looking at a handful of players on the team that are seniors for this year as we scout and evaluate for the recent Senior Bowl. I think that there were definitely several players that jumped out to me that, you know, appeared to have the body type that you look for. And, you know, what I would say is, say when Nebraska plays Ohio State, when the Nebraska fans are there, look at that Ohio State team. You know, Ohio State, Alabama, Florida State, LSU to an extent, although they don't have the number of wins based upon some of the ability they have. But those are teams that are recruiting to certain standards in terms of height, weight, speed, and that's what Nebraska is really trying to get to as they spin forward here. But, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say there was a particular position group or player that jumped out at me, but I did notice some young players. I'm like, hey, who's that player? Who's this? When they told me who they were. And so I definitely think that they're on the right track in that regard.
The defensive side of the ball, Coach Diaco is running the show, and it's going to be his style of defense, the 3-4 shift. That DNA is included with what Belichick and Parcells and, of course, Al Groh did. That their fingerprints are on what Diaco wants to do, that setup, that style of 3-4, we're thinking. You know the Belichick culture well, you know the defense well, and your thoughts on Diaco and this Nebraska D. It's a transitional year. Obviously, it's year one. You got to get all those puzzle pieces, but do you think that 3-4, that system can thrive in college football out of Nebraska?
Well, I think it can. Of course, the flexibility of the scheme. I mean, everybody, you know, on paper, they're a 3-4, 4-3. But honestly, as soon as the other offense comes out with three or four wide receivers on the field, then you're out of that base package and you're in some sort of nickel or dime defense with five or six defensive backs. But I would say this to you. I think in on the western side of the Big Ten Conference, you've got to be able to line up and play big boy football against Iowa, because they're going to use multiple tight ends, so the 3-4 will serve them well when they play Iowa. But then, of course, you've got to be able to spread out and play out in space when you go against a team, you know, like Northwestern, as an example. So when you look at it that way, Wisconsin, you know, they can kind of go both directions offensively with Paul Chryst, who Mike knows well. Mm-hmm. So I do think, first and foremost, the flexibility of the scheme, you know, gives them a chance to morph back and forth with whatever they need to do regarding a specific opponent.
What programs have you seen, are you impressed with, that have been able to identify and develop those hybrid defenders that you'll need in the 3-4, but you need when you're facing a team that can get an athletic guy in the slot? Who does it the best? Who can recruit it the best?
Well, obviously, I've gotten a chance to watch Alabama over these last 8 seasons, and you know they were able to shop down the 5-star aisle, so to speak. But they've also developed, you know, 3- and 4-star players. There's been some occasions where they've signed 3-stars, and people were left scratching their heads, like, "Well, what did they see in that particular player?" And then he develops into a 4- or 5-star. But they're, you know, certainly well coached, and you know they've sort of mastered the adaptability of being able to play big, or you know, play smaller and faster. Because look, when Nick Saban came to Bama in 2007, it was a different style of play then than it is now. So they've had to evolve over this last decade. So they've shown that ability to do it. You know, obviously all your blue blood programs, you know, SC's got a chance to get back to the top 10 on a consistent basis, I think, now. Florida State, Florida, Michigan, Ohio State. I mean, these are all programs that they're going to get their share of players. But as you say, drafting, quote, in college and then developing is really the most important thing outside of the actual X's and O's, at least on the college level, in my view, is probably the most important thing. You've got to figure out exactly who you are and how you're going to build your team. And once you get everybody on the same page, then it can certainly be done.
Phil Savage with us, executive director of the Senior Bowl. Phil, to let you go, and thanks for giving us a few minutes with Hail Varsity. I need to know what your year was like with Coach Belichick, and I know you worked for a number of years with Cleveland, but you left Coach Riley, and he told us that story. You left San Antonio to go to Cleveland, and you're with Belichick, you're with Saban, you're with Ferentz, you're with Coach Hill, you're with Coach Jim Bates. What was that experience like for you? Those are some names, and they are tremendous coaches.
Yeah, I think we ended up having like 6 future head coaches and maybe 6 general managers come out of that staff. So it was a proverbial football think tank. It goes to show you how difficult winning is. We had one winning season in 5 years. But wow, the foundation that was established for all of us, that, you know, some of us went on, became the Ravens when we moved from Cleveland. Others went to other colleges and other pro teams, but all of us had that shared experience of kind of being on the ground floor when Bill was putting together his program, and obviously it's been modified and adapted to the college game under Nick Saban at Alabama. But, you know, at that time, I think we all knew that Bill and Nick were really good coaches, but I don't know that anybody could have predicted that they would be the preeminent coaches at the college and pro level. Like they became now as we sit here in 2017.
Phil, take care. Best to you, and thanks for a few minutes today.
Well, you're welcome. I enjoyed my visit out there, and we're certainly going to be keeping our eye on some of the Huskers this year. And, you know, we're going to watch Tanner Lee from afar and see, you know, how his year goes and then ultimately what he decides to do. But I think your fan base should be excited about watching him play this year.
Phil Savage, Executive Director, Senior Bowl. Thanks to Phil. Caller 4, caller 5, now a 6-month subscription to HailVarsity.com. Caller 4, caller 5, 466-3776.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Phil Savage, Executive Director, Senior Bowl. Jerry DiNardo with us tomorrow. And he had a ton to say. You know, the type of year Tanner could have, the decision he might have to make specifically. I got into just a lot of football with Phil. And there's a lot that stuck out to me, but I want to spend a second or two just on flexibility and adaptability. And that's the name of the game, isn't it? With the hybrid defender defensive scheme. And that is what you're angling for and trying to get. Because it's not a cookie cutter. And back in the day, man, to play for something bigger, you had to beat Switzer in the wishbone. To play for something bigger, you had to figure out how to shut down Colorado's eye bone. And then Colorado shifted to a one back. Let's throw the ball around to Michael Westbrook. And Washington, when they were great in the 90s, they had a one-back, trips-wide receiver set, and frickin' Miami, and then the shotgun. Shotgun tempo with Charlie Ward in Florida State. I mean, it shifted, and it wasn't the offenses per se that were so incredible. They weren't anything different or more nuts than what you'd see from USC or UCLA or pick a school. It was the speed and depth on defense that made Nebraska great. But Nebraska became flexible on defense when they shifted, right? They did. They just got faster than you and better than you off the edge. And they had more dudes to make it happen. That's what kind of Nebraska is trying to do now. How flexible was it really for Nebraska in the Big Ten defensively? You had this defense designed at its optimum to shut down whoever in the Big 12. With Sue and Gomes and Prince, and you had a killer defense. That was the Big 12. And you see the Big 12 score, you see scores in the Big 12. 65-59, which is pretty sweet if you're an overs better. But it's not realistic in the Big 10. But more and more you're having different styles to cope with in the Big Ten. So in week number 2, Nebraska's got to be ready for whatever Taggart and Oregon can do. You know they'll have speed. You fast forward, once you get to October, what's Wisconsin going to do? We're going to try and bludgeon you to death on offense. And then you got the Urban Meyer power spread. So it's not uniform. You got to be able to adapt and be flexible and counter it. Have an answer every week because it'll be a different question. So that's what Nebraska's trying to do and working on with this setup and scheme and system defensively. Just have an answer. Sometimes there aren't any. Score more points. That's the answer. So I love that insight from Phil Savage on the flexibility. We're working on a comment he made about Nebraska when it comes to modernizing their program and deciding if Nebraska wants to be the Nebraska of 1997, 20 years ago, or if there's a different way to skin the old cat. And that's what you got to ask yourself because, I mean, you're a Nebraska football fan. You are super, super smart. You know what's good football. You know what will work and won't work. And what won't work is not being able to be good at running the football. and be tough. Here's Phil's comment. Last segment, Phil Savage was with us on what Nebraska needs to make up their mind with.
Well, I think it can. Of course, the flexibility of the scheme. I mean, everybody, you know, on paper, they're a 3-4-4-3. But honestly, as soon as the other offense comes out with three or four wide receivers on the field, then you're out of that base package and you're in some sort of nickel or dime defense with five or six defensive backs. But I would say this to you. I think in on the western side of the Big Ten Conference, you've got to be able to line up and play big boy football against Iowa because they're going to use multiple tight ends. So the 3-4 will serve them well when they play Iowa. But then, of course, you've got to be able to spread out and play out in space when you go against a team, you know, like Northwestern, as an example. So when you look at it that way, Wisconsin, you know, they can kind of go both directions offensively with Paul Chris, who Mike knows well. Mm-hmm. So I do think, first and foremost, the flexibility of the scheme, you know, gives them a chance to morph back and forth with whatever they need to do regarding a specific opponent.
Okay, Phil Savage there on that flexibility. We were talking about that, which is true. But also with Nebraska, you got to decide how you're going to be great. Is it going to be the pro style that does it? Or is it going to be winning with option ground dominant football? I think you need to be able to run to win, but you need to have the ability to throw. And a lot of times if you're option or zone read, you're going to be more hit or miss when it comes to your quarterback's consistency and completion ability. Unless you find Mariota, there's a cloning project. Fine. Go get as many Mariotas as you can. Can run it, can throw it, pretty good. So that's some thoughts from Phil Savage. I swear to you, in my own mind, I've called him Phil Steele every time I talk to him. Just because the one Phil we have on the show is usually Phil Steele, but thank you to Phil Savage. Okay, some news and notes with practice today. Wideouts that were out. Kyan Williams still working on that hammy. Also out on the line, Dyshawn Neal. Mick Stoltenberg, back from practice, Spielman, which is good. Spielman's nice. You can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Let's talk defensive backs for a minute here. Some thoughts from Dante Williams. And Dante was asked about his expectations at corner. And here's your mix. You know Jones's story. When will he be back? Don't know. Will he be back? Don't know. I'd bet that he is back at some point. Maybe for the November stretch run. But what do you want from Lamar? What do you want from Lee? What do you want from Boodle? What are your expectations, Dante? Tell me.
My expectations are always through the roof. I wouldn't have took this job if my expectations wasn't. So I would say like this, if they did 10 passes and we picked off 9, they didn't meet my expectations because they throw 10 passes, we should pick off 10. So my expectations will never be met, and that's why I'm here and right now where I'm at. So, I mean, we're going to continue to work, continue to grind, and we're going to get better every day.
There's his comments there. They throw it on us 10 times, we want 10 picks. DiCaprio Boodle is something that's been talked about a bit. He is continuing to fight. And where's he at? What impressions has he made? Here's Coach Dante on DCAP. He's a guy really playing well.
We have 3 starting corners, so it can't be no larger than that. He already has a large role. So as long as he continues to play like he's been playing and get better every day, we continue to have 3 starting corners. If he falls off, then we'll have 2 or maybe 1. Who knows? But we're going to make sure the best 11 guys are on the field.
The here and now is this. You have 3 starting corners. And from what we saw last week, Boodle's your guy on the outside in the nickel. Lee is your inside dude in the nickel. Base might be Lee, but Boodle's still coming. What are his traits? What's wowing in camp?
He's aggressive. He's very, very aggressive. He can run, knowledgeable. He's very self-conscious. When something's not right, he wants to get it right. So he has a want to. And sometimes it's hard to find a want to, especially a young guy. They go through the ringer a little bit and, you know, they get down the dumps. He's going to always be the same person. And that's the life of being a DB. You got to make sure you're level-headed. And he makes sure of that. When he has a mistake, he comes in there and corrects it.
All right. So that is good news to hear. On a guy like Boodle, quiet Florida dude, kind of like Chris Jones. What's he about? Just getting better, just continuing to rock and making himself great. You love that attitude, and you love his speed. He can be aggressive. You know why? Because you're going to blink and he'll recover. He's that fast. Dante has been quoted, and I would give credit to Ware if I knew Ware. But Dante asked the question about something he said about Nebraska becoming a monster recruiting school. He was asked about that. He said, yeah, Nebraska can become a monster recruiting school. Here's the why he thinks Nebraska can become a monster recruiting school. It's the last thing he said before he got out of Dodge and away from our microphones. Very good with his time.
Because we can win. So anytime you can win and all of a sudden guys are graduating and getting degrees and guys are going to the NFL, you could be a monster anywhere. And I think, like I said, Coach Riley brought the right staff together at the right time, at the right place, to where we can do great things together.
Okay. That's a motivational speech. It's a motivational quote. You can win at Nebraska. You have won at Nebraska. And you got this staff. He's pretty geeked about it. He's excited about it. Should be. He's been bringing in some pretty awesome players. So we'll hear from Diaco. We'll get to the issue of leadership and confidence and working for Riley as we move forward here this second hour. Welcome to join the show, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Shillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House with Nebraska football. And the way to win, is it this way? Coach DiNardo mentioned that the best chance to win schematically is what they have now, a 3-4 in this pro style. You agree with that? Uncle Jerry will be with us tomorrow. More from Diaco. This is Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Working through a Tuesday, big thanks to Phil Savage, executive director on the Senior Bowl. His thoughts on Mike Riley and Tanner Lee and just college football, what he's seeing. Mitch Sherman in the first hour. Tomorrow, Jerry DiNardo with us and still working on a few things. Brad Edwards on Thursday. And you're welcome to join us, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. And we were talking a little bit about the offense and the 3-4 defense. And, you know, one of the big questions with the shift is the result. Will it work? And I think you could absolutely see some work early on this year, but by the end of the year. And a key spot for that, and again, to kind of fall back to Mr. Defense, that is Charlie McBride, if you get fantastic linebacker play, if you get incredible inside linebacker play, you got to have the other nine killing it for sure. But why not? It absolutely can work. Back to Phil's take on this flexibility and adaptability. It's true. Because third down, you're in kind of a 4-2 something. If it's third down and nine, it might be in a dime. If you're playing the reincarnation of the run and shoot with 4 to 5 wide. You're going to be in 5 defensive backs. And you don't want your thumper safety covering a 5'9", 4'2", 40 slot guy. You just don't. Brian's with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Brian, go ahead, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good, man. Thanks.
Am I the only one that feels like this season just has something different to it? Like, going into this season, we're going to knock somebody's block off. Like, it's going to be somebody big, too. Like, I'm not to toot our horn too high, but, you know, like Ohio State or, you know, we're gonna squeak out something.
I don't think you're crazy, and I'll tell you why, Brian, because Riley's already done it. He already beat Michigan State when they were a 6-7 football team. Michigan State went to the college football playoff that year. Mike Riley was a monster giant killer at Oregon State. How many times did he take down Pete Carroll in USC? A lot.
A couple times.
Yeah, he did. I mean, his top 10 wins and some of his top 10 road wins were incredible. Now, it's the week after where you can't do something to the bed.
Fumble.
Right. You can't screw up against Aztec State University or whoever. It's the follow-up. It's the consistency. He had a bunch of monster, head-shaking, let's lead Sports Center wins.
And I think that's the one thing we have done consistently ever since the Bill Callahan era started. We get a good win, and then the next year, or the next game, we'd fall flat on our face.
Sometimes that would happen. There was just too much. All right, you had some super high highs, but your lows were really, really low. Brian, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you tuning in. 466-377-6800. 825-5865. I like Brian's thought there. I mean, it's not crazy. You can have a feel like it could be a special year. I think you just, what you can testify to a little bit is just kind of the number of times you hear drama-free, drama-free, drama-free. And the intent is to have a drama-free program. Had a little bit of drama off the field with some medicinal options. But for the most part, I think it's pretty chill. And now you've got that button pusher in here. You can have the head guy that's super chill, but you got to have your button pusher in here to be bad cop, energy, police, motivator, and screamer to get guys fired up. You had Coach Diaco today asked about leadership, specifically with Riley. And I thought this was some of the best comments given today, and a lot of guys gave their time, Freedom and Dante and Coach Bray and Diaco, obviously, in front of the old backdrop and table. But here is Diaco on Riley, the leadership aspect of what he brings to the party.
Coach Riley's a great leader. Coach Riley's one of the finest men in our business, and I think that you hear a lot of people say that he's a nice man and a kind man, and that's true, but he's a tough gentleman. It's more than that. He's a real football guy. He's a nuts and bolts guy. He's a tough guy, and he's a kind man, and he has great character in class.
That's pretty good. When Diaco wants to let it rock, he can. And when it comes to what he's taken in, I mean, Diaco's been a head coach before, but I think everybody who's worked for Riley takes something from him. And Diaco expanded a bit on Riley. You know, what's Diaco learning? Because realistically, this defense gets resurrected. They're really good. He gets a knock on his door to be a head coach again. 3 and out is what he loves as a coordinator. Not as a head coach. He wants to be a head coach again. And time will tell if he can get that opportunity again or if he's a guy that can command a sick monster salary, and you go the Clemson route, and you're a rich defensive coordinator, and that's what you do. Whatever his preference is. But leadership is something that you just heard about from Diaco on Riley. It's also learning a lot from Mike.
I'm learning a lot from him on how to behave, how to have patience, how to listen. He's a dynamic listener, spectacular listener. I'm honored and blessed to spend the time with him that I have, and it's just been an absolute benefit to my life. I'm so appreciative and honored by it.
Pretty sincere. When Diaco talks, I mean, he'll stare you right in the eye, because that's just kind of how he communicates. Now, you heard a second ago, Riley's a tough gentleman. What makes Mr. Riley tough? Diaco was asked that.
I don't know. Maybe playing on the football team with Bear Bryant. You think maybe that helped a little bit? His father is a coach. I don't know if you've ever been a son of a coach or what that might feel like, but it's probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day. So I think that there's a lot of elements.
What kind of sandpaper?
Like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
Have you ever had that happen? Like, I remember feeling sandpaper. But in all honesty, I've not had anyone. I mean, I've been a bad kid before, but Papa Bear didn't hold me down with the old belt sander, grade 10. So here you go. You whiffed on the old tight end. The back was yours out of the backfield. Give me the stairs. All right, we'll say goodbye to a Tuesday. Colton's out of vodka. Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Saying goodbye, winding down a Tuesday. Phil Savage joined us, Executive Director, Senior Bowl, and a longtime NFL man in the front office and scouting. His thoughts on Riley and Lee and Nebraska, and some good stuff there on flexibility and adaptability. Kind of shared some thoughts on what the Big Ten thought of their trip to Lincoln. Jerry DiNardo with us tomorrow on the show. Mitch Sherman was fantastic. Mitch joined us. We talked Nebraska. He gave us his thoughts on the offense he would run if Mitch had a headset and a ball cap. He also gave us a look-see into why Alex Gordon may continue to struggle. That was pretty good. As, Mitch knows Gordo about as well as anybody. Number of years he's covered him. So that was pretty entertaining to hear from Mitch. College football and some real talk on Alex Gordon from Mitch. If you missed the show, that is okay. We won't hold it against you. You are welcome to check the podcast out. I'm dying to someday run into all of you and hear about your playlists are like. I have a playlist too on my phone, but ditch the playlist. Give us a try on podcast. And the ways you can do so, real easy, HailVarsity.com. Go to the homepage. There's forums, there's football, there's recruiting, there's sports, there's photos. Got to check those out from Aaron Babcock. There's premium. There's sponsors. We love you. And then there's more. Under the More tab, you can find Hail Varsity Radio. You can also go to iTunes. That will be sent to you. You can enjoy it. It don't cost nothing. And the ESPN Lincoln app. And if you're in Lincoln, check us out on FM 101.5. Been on the FM for probably about 8 weeks. And, of course, 1480. You can also hear us 1460, 1550, Kearney, Hastings, Grand Island, if you're headed out west. Further west, North Platte, ESPN 1410, or if you're headed to northeast Nebraska, say hi to Gus Forrest and our dear friends in Columbus on News Talk 900. So that's the ways you can hear us around the state. That's where you can hear us on the podcast. And don't want to miss our conversation we had with Phil Savage or Mitch Sherman. Uncle Jerry, tomorrow, we are still efforting a couple of other dudes, but it's been a good show. Do we have any baseball tickets today to give away? No? Okay. So no Salt Dog tickets today. We did the Ribfest tickets already. We already got a couple subscribers to HailVarsity.com. If you didn't get in, it's okay. 30-day free trial offer. Do, please do, get a hold of the new Hail Varsity magazine. It is out. It is the volleyball preview. It is the mother of all volleyball previews. Photography is second to none. And the storytelling and information between Brandon Vogel, Jacob Padilla, incredible. Mike Babcock has just a phenomenal column. So you want to get this issue. You want to subscribe, HailVarsity.com/subscriber, 855-3-HUSKER. $29.95 is what you can spend for a subscription to Hail Varsity. That is, quite frankly, robbery. It's robbery. Leave the ski mask and gun at home. It's awesome. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow. Colton, you in tomorrow? No? No. 2 hours is enough with you. Okay. Find us at 4 tomorrow on Hail Varsity. For Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt, we thank you for tuning in. Talk to you next time on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.